This year is the Year of Indigenous Languages, and this week the University of Sydney is holding a conference seeking to ensure the preservation of Indigenous languages in the Himalayas. Credibly, there's over 300 Indigenous languages in the Himalayas, and they are being lost as globalisation and systemised education seep into the more and more remote areas. I asked Dr. Mark Post, lecturer in linguistics at the University of Sydney, how it was that the number of Himalayan languages actually increased.
For a couple of reasons. Number one, new languages keep being discovered. And for another, we keep discovering that languages that we previously thought were one language are in fact two, three, four, or even more.
How do you find that out? How do you find there's another language involved in the same one that you thought was there already?
Well, in many cases, people are grouped together because they're seen as members of the same ethnic group. But when you actually get around to investigating what's going on in their daily lives, they find that they not only speak the language that you expect them to speak if they're members of that ethnic group, but they actually speak a completely different language as well, whether that's spoken only at home, whether that's spoken only when they're working in the fields amongst one another. It's sort of surprising, but the basic facts of people's daily lives in many cases have not yet been noticed by a majority population simply because minority peoples don't tend to get paid attention to at that level.
So and are they somewhat remote? Does that sort of keep
in
them?
In most cases, yes. In some cases, people can be hiding in plain sight. But in most cases, that's true. It's because they're spoken in these languages are spoken very often in very remote corners, sort of mountain cul-de-sacs in the high Himalayas. In many cases, these areas have been off limits to researchers until very recently, in some cases as recently as 2 or 3 years ago.
And are the Himalayan languages all related, and are they more related to the sort of Chinese side or the Indian side?
This would be wonderful if we knew the answer to it.
It's a big question, is it?
This is a topic of considerable discussion at this conference that we're currently holding. So this is something that we don't really know the answer to, and we won't know the answer to until more languages are fundamentally described and understood. And in some cases, we may never know the answer because some of these languages are likely to go extinct before they can even be described adequately.
And are any of them written, or are they all spoken languages?
Mostly, traditionally, the overwhelming majority of indigenous languages in the Himalayas are traditionally oral languages, so unwritten. There are some exceptions, but generally speaking, most of these languages have not been written until very recently.
Now, I understand that the people of the eastern Himalayas have been quite good at utilising some of the Indian administrative framework to help maintain their languages. How have they been able to do that?
Well, this is a sort of remarkable case of adaptability and ingenuity. One thing that we're used to hearing is stories about how indigenous peoples are marginalized by dominant societies, in some cases sort of actively persecuted. And those stories are not without foundation. But we also find quite different things happening in some parts of the world. In the eastern Himalaya, which is basically the northeastern part of India and some adjoining regions, people have been basically left to their own devices up until very recent times. After the British left India, this area is basically simply defaulted to the new Indian state, which they never previously had any relationship with. During this 50, 60 years after that, people have sort of ingeniously learned to learn to use the Indian administrative structure, develop NGOs to support themselves, develop NGOs to support their languages, get government funding in connection with them. And so we essentially have people saving their own cultures and saving their own languages through adaptation to an incredibly bureaucratic system, which has never been thought really to be of benefit to anyone. But it turns out to be of great benefit to many of the indigenous groups of the Himalayas who are able to basically raise their own voices and manage their own affairs through understanding how the very complex Indian administrative system can be used.
And on the northern side, I suppose, the Tibetan side, the Tibetan people have been maintaining their languages through their struggle against, I suppose, the Han culture.
Yes, this is something I have less direct experience with because I work on the Indian side. My understanding is certainly that political protest in recent years has been one of the key ways that Tibetan groups, especially minority Tibetan groups, who in many cases don't speak Tibetan themselves, they speak entirely different languages, are still able to sort of raise their voices and maintain their culture, maintain their solidarity, even through these modern times in which basically, yes, you're right, sort of the Han cultures are spreading themselves increasingly throughout China and marginalizing the minority cultures that are still there.
And so the conference is on now. You're having the event on Thursday. And is there anything planned after that? Is there going to be another one next year?
So the conferences that we have happening right now at the University of Sydney are annual conferences. The task of sustaining an Indigenous language in the face of all the pressures that they are currently facing is a very difficult one. Communities need to develop strategies, linguists need to be part of that, and we need to work together to learn what's working and what's not. And that's one of the things that we hope to learn from one another and from the people that we've invited here from the Himalayan region.
Dr. Mark Post, lecturer in linguistics at the University of Sydney, speaking with me there.